It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. That is Beethoven's Symphony No. 9, Ode to Joy, performed by the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. The Duluth Superior Symphony will perform the 9th this weekend, wrapping up its season and the Beethoven Project. Call in with your questions about classical music, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lori Skelton is here, host of Afternoon Classics and Wisconsin Classical and WPR's News and Music Network. She's been with WPR covering classical music for 30 years now, Lori. Welcome back.
It is so good to be back, especially when there's I will admit it. We've got too much to talk about this morning, which is wonderful.
We have to get running here. So Duluth Symphony tomorrow, marking the end of the season and the end of the Beethoven Project. Tell us about this project.
They started this in 2016, working with Minnesota Public Radio. The idea was to not only perform all of the Beethoven symphonies, but to record them as well. And as with so many ensembles, the idea was to get this wrapped up by the end of 2020, when it was Beethoven's 250th birthday. Mm. And we all know what happened. So a few things got delayed. For instance, the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra ended its season last year with the Beethoven 9th. And here Duluth Superior Symphony is going to bring it for their season ender this weekend, as you say, this Saturday night.
And at the finale, there's Banner by Jesse Montgomery.
Yes. This is some...
sense a little riff there on Star Spangled Banner.
More than a little riff.
Oh, okay.
This actually grew out of a piece that she wrote in 2009. She was commissioned to write a piece called Anthem as a way to honor Barack Obama. Hmm. And that combined the Star Spangled Banner with the unofficial Black national anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. So for the 200th anniversary of the Star Spangled Banner in 2014, she decided to expand on that. And she comments, "A tribute to the United States national anthem means acknowledging the contradictions, leaps, and bounds and milestones that allow us to celebrate and maintain the tradition of our ideals." What we just heard is a really interesting take on the idea of you recognize phrases from the anthem,
yes,
but it's buried in sounds that are not quite so distinctive. It's almost as if it's the undercurrent that's playing in every individual mind that contemplates it. It's a very interesting take on what we think of as something obvious, and she reminds us that there's a lot going on here.
We're going to move now from Duluth Superior to Madison Symphony Orchestra, and performing music includes a composition from Florence Price. Let's listen to Price's Symphony No. 3, performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra. Tell us about Florence Price.
Florence Price was born in Little Rock, educated at the New England Conservatory. She was really active in Chicago from 1927 until she died in 1953. First African-American woman recognized as a symphonic composer, first to have a composition played by a major orchestra. She wrote over 300 pieces, many of which we thought were lost until in 2009 a collection of her papers was found in what had been one of her summer homes. And
wow.
The recording we just heard, the Philadelphia Orchestra, that recording won the Grammy for Best Orchestral Composition last year. And the Philadelphia Orchestra is at work on a new recording. I know they included both of her violin concertos in their current season. So I'm betting that's what the next recording will include.
It just seems like symphonies are paying attention and are embracing her. And it's like she's finally getting that well-deserved attention for these works, so prolific. What is that, like, take-home message?
It's one of the reasons we, on the classical side of Wisconsin Public Radio, keep reading, keep researching, keep looking for new things, because there will always be something new to be found, whether it is a new composer with the ink still wet on the score paper, or somebody has found something in an archive or is able to clear up some confusion about something we thought was established. There's always more to learn and more to share. And it is incredibly exciting knowing that from this attention to Florence Price, now there is more attention being paid to other women composers, to other African-American composers. It's that wonderful pebble in the lake, and the ripples just keep going out.
Lori Skelton, host of Afternoon Classics, our guide to season finale classical concerts around the state. Join the discussion any point on classical. Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. This is Florence Price's Symphony No. 3, performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. That is Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture, performed by the Icelandic Symphony Orchestra. The Chippewa Valley Symphony, set to play the overture and more during its season finale performance in Eau Claire next weekend. Be part of this conversation about springtime concerts. Call 800-642-1234 with your questions. Lori Skelton is here, host of Afternoon Classics each weekday on the WPR News and Music Network. So, Lori, the Chippewa Valley Symphony's season finale is titled The Rise and Fall of Freedom. What is the theme of the performance?
We have three Russian composers living or showcasing different levels of freedom and oppression. They open with a beautiful prelude from Mussorgsky's Khovanchina, which is an 1880 opera that deals with a 17th century struggle between progressive and reactionary factions. It led to the rise of Peter the Great. Then we go on to Tchaikovsky, who was a closeted composer. And here he is tackling what is arguably one of the best-known love stories in the world, about a couple who would rather die than live without one another. And then we come into the 20th century and Dmitri Shostakovich, who was working under very serious restrictions with the Stalinist government.
And we have some music from Dmitri Shostakovich, the Fifth Symphony, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra. Let's listen. The Fifth Symphony, Lori, really about some intense politics. What is going on with the background on this piece?
Shostakovich was incredibly popular in the 1930s. He wrote an opera called Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk District. Slightly racy plot, definitely avant-garde music, and for 2 years it was the hit. Opera companies were performing it all over the place. And then Stalin decided to attend a performance. And the next morning, it was condemned in the state newspapers. It disappeared. Stalin started giving personal attacks to the composer. So Shostakovich pulled his Fourth Symphony that was already in rehearsal and he wrote his fifth symphony that he called A Soviet Artist's Response to Justified Criticism. As required by the authorities, the work was lyrical. There's a heroic tone, as you just heard, but underneath it, there's a subtext of despair. It's a spoof, if you will, on the light entertaining waltzes, the cheering crowds that the Soviet authorities were asking for in music. It also holds some very heartfelt laments and folk songs that were altered by just one note to, again, show more depth of feeling. It's privately acknowledged as the ultimate act of ironic resistance, if you will. It's still, almost 100 years later, it's still one of the 20th century's best examples of creativity over oppression. And this is not to say that Shostakovich had an easy run for the rest of his life. He still had to struggle. But Symphony No. 5 really is, if you will, his own banner against whatever might be out to crush the artistic spirit.
It's hard to not think about the artistic spirit when you consider the brutal fighting continuing in Ukraine after,
exactly,
you know, Russia's invasion last year. How are you seeing symphonic orchestras, you know, weave in current events into their performances?
What Chippewa Valley is doing with this program is a really good example of somebody taking the time. Orchestras typically plan their seasons out well ahead of a season. And if you're working with a soloist, you sometimes have to plan 3-4 years ahead. So obviously, they were looking at the conflict in Ukraine over a year ago. And over a year ago, there was call not only to stay away from Russian artists who supported Russia's invasion, but there was a call to just drop all Russian art completely. And I think what Chippewa Valley is saying here is there is a way to deal with oppression by looking at not just Ukrainian composers, but Russian composers as well. That there is a way to still maintain years, if not centuries, of artistic development and yet acknowledge what's going on. Any intelligent artistic organization is always thinking not just of the past, but the present, because they will be performing to audiences in the present. Art cannot help but touch people where they are now. So why not take some interest and do whatever you can to keep things relevant?
WPR's Laurie Skelton with us as we talk about the classical music landscape, upcoming performances, spring finales. You can join in 800-642-1234. Moving to Racine Symphony, Laurie, and the Wisconsin Philharmonic concludes their seasons. Both will perform Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, Claude Debussy. And here is the piece performed by the Oslo Philharmonic. So the piece based off of a poem. What is the story here?
Stefan Mallarmé's poem was written in 1876, and it was actually inspired by an earlier play. And what the Faun is dreaming of as he wakes in a warm, I guess you can hear a few insects buzzing in the background afternoon, was he dreaming about dancing with some beautiful nymphs, or did it really happen? The afternoon grows warmer, the Faun gets drowsy again, dropping off to sleep, hoping to conjure the dream again. And unlike the Shostakovich piece, which had a steady beat and very strong brass rhythms, here we've got something that almost takes the form completely out of music. And that grabbed everyone's attention. Something that fluid, and you could almost feel the heat waves rising out of the orchestra. It was brand new at the time, and we enjoy it now as something we're fairly familiar with, but this was groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking
at the time.
Yes. WC, the prelude to the afternoon of a fun performed by the Oslo Philharmonic. Here we'll hear more. Lori Skelton, host of Afternoon Classics on WPR News and Music Network. Join in throughout the conversation with your questions. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. That is one of three pieces for cello and piano. French conductor and teacher Nadia Boulanger wrote in 1914, performed by French-Canadian violinist Marina Thibault and Corey Ham on piano. A Madison event honoring Boulanger and her legacy is expected to take place in June. Bring your questions about classical music. Call in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lori Skelton, our tour guide, a host and producer on WPR's News and Music Network. Lori, take us inside. The LuNArt Festival starts at the end of this month, highlights women in the arts. What is it celebrating with Nadia Boulanger?
We're celebrating the person responsible for most of the classical music development in the 20th century. Nadia Boulanger was born in 1887. She was born into a musical family and sent to the Paris Conservatory. But after some work, she thought, I'm really not that talented as a composer. I want to teach. And she taught generations of composers, soloists, arrangers. She worked with Philip Glass. She worked with Quincy Jones. She worked with Aaron Copland and Astor Piazzolla, George Walker. Everyone who had a chance to meet her had a chance to take her lessons forward to their students. The thing that Nadia Boulanger was best at was finding what was the individual voice for a particular composer and developing that. She wasn't about, you have to write this kind of music or that kind of music. She was about finding what is your music and how can we make your music the best thing possible. She was also one of the first women to conduct. She spent a great deal of time touring, especially in English-speaking countries. She worked in the United States and in England. She worked at Juilliard, London's Royal Academy. She conducted orchestras in America. And I
want to stop you there because a woman conductor, you know, at the podium with a baton, that's not usual even today.
I was taking conducting classes when I was in college and grad school in the 80s. And I remember going to a seminar. And I had just met Joanne Folletta, who was the associate conductor of the Milwaukee Symphony, one of the most recorded conductors in the world.
Yes.
And I said at the time, in the 80s, we're done. We've achieved it. We don't have to worry about trying to break a glass ceiling. Women have arrived. And every woman who was a generation ahead of me looked at me and basically said, oh, honey, you've got so much to learn. And here we are in 2023. Still saying, yes, strides have been made. For instance, last weekend, the Madison Opera Company had The Marriage of Figaro conducted by a woman, Stephanie Rhodes Russell, who, when she travels on the road to do a conducting gig, brings her twin toddler sons with her. Strides are being made, but we've still got work to do, all of us, to make this less of a, oh my goodness, isn't this wonderful, and Oh, of course. It's a woman on the podium.
Oh, wow. I need to tell that story to one of my twins who was in that audience for Figaro.
Oh, yeah. it was a great production. I'm glad your twin enjoyed it.
I want to ask you a little more about Lunart Festival. You know, it sounds like this is more than Madison, and it's more like a movement beyond Wisconsin.
This is one of the best examples I found of one individual, Ivar Ugarčič, the founder and the flutist behind this festival. She basically said about a decade ago, we need to do something to really focus on women in the arts. And this year's Lunart Festival, yes, there will be classical music. They're going to do a chamber play about Nadia Boulanger, but they're also going to spend a day with rock legend June Millington. So the idea that we've got a woman rock guitarist next to Nadia Boulanger, I think it would thrill Nadia. But this is someone who had an idea years ago, and over the years, with more and more involvement, this has really grown into something that is getting a great deal of attention. The Lunart Festival, Lunart does things throughout the year. There is a young composers symposium and contests and workshops, and this incredible festival we've got at the end of May highlights a year's worth of work and also just gets us ready to get launched into something new.
I wonder, how is this festival and others like it coming out of the pandemic?
When I talked to you about this in December, I said things are improving, but we've still got a ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
And things are still improving. As I say, we've got too much to talk about in terms of season finales and chamber festivals coming up this summer. But, for instance, some of the chamber festivals that grew out of the pandemic, the idea that, oh, we can set up for a couple of days out of doors and play music and invite folks in. They did that in Stoughton. They did that in Spring Green. I don't know if they're doing that this year. A number of the festivals that are supposed to be running later in the summer have yet to post a calendar on their websites, let alone an actual program. Mm. So, and there are still a couple of orchestras around the state that I knew were putting on concerts in 2019 that I still haven't heard from yet these years later. We've still got to take care of our performing artists and make certain that everybody has a place to perform, and everybody has a place to come listen.
We're taking a statewide tour of symphony season finales this spring with WPR's Lori Skelton. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lori, you mentioned chamber music and summer chamber music festivals. As you're talking about, they are coming up. Some we haven't quite seen yet what may happen. You know, you've highlighted at least 10 happening through August. Which ones are your favorites? Which ones do you enjoy so much?
Well, the ones I have the easiest time getting to are the ones a little closer to Madison. The Green Lake Festival of Music, which is at Thrasher Opera House, wonderful old building in Green Lake, and then some concerts at Ripon College as well.
Mm.
In Madison and in Stoughton throughout the month of June, there is the Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society. They've always had a commitment to contemporary composers. They've got several works by Jesse Montgomery in their season year. And then Midsummer's Music in June, July. They take a break in August for the Peninsula Music Festival of Orchestral Music, and then they come back in September. Now, these are chamber musicians that go all around Door County. So no matter where you're vacationing, you'll have a chance to hear a really great chamber concert somewhere up there.
And we're going to get a taste of that with Gabriel Fauré's Piano Quartet No. 2 in G minor, and heard during Door County's Midsummer Music Festival.
Thank you.
That's Manhattan Chamber Players. Thank you to them. Lori, tell us about Foray and how this mingles with summer.
The composer was born about 40 years before Nadia Boulanger, but he lived through 1924. He's very much a transitional composer between the Romantic era and the modern age. Most of the pieces that are known to the general public are things that came early in his career, his incredibly beautiful Requiem and some of the nocturnes for piano. But as he worked later and later into his life, a lot of his work would really influence composers into the 20th century. Aaron Copland thought very highly of this second piano quartet. He referred to the Adagio movement as, quote, a long sigh of infinite tenderness, a long moment of quiet melancholy and nostalgic charm, intensity on a background of calm.
I love that description. So beautiful. I want to turn to the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra in June, scheduled to perform Gustav Mahler's Resurrection Symphony. Let's hear just a part of the piece performed by the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. What was so innovative about Mahler's Resurrection Symphony?
This is a 90-minute symphony. I should tell you that right off the bat. If you're going to go, there is no intermission. This is because it is meant to take you, whether or not you agree with his original program, this is meant to take you from a funeral and remembering good times and struggling against hopelessness. To the fourth movement, we have an alto solo singing of, I want something better, I want something more. And then in that fifth movement, which takes about 30 minutes in of itself, it ends with that incredible chorus, rise again, my heart, you will rise in an instant. What has oppressed you, what you have conquered, will take you higher. And whether you are a Christian, whether you are an atheist, there is something in that final movement after the four movements of life and struggle and doubt. You cannot listen to that finale and not feel like, yes, I can do better and I will do better. It's the first time I had a chance to sing that was in the late 80s, and it had been your usual mid-20s rough year, bad relationship, unsure about my job. And at the end of that concert, I don't think I slept for 6 hours. I was so buzzing. And I know the audience gets the same feeling. This was supposed to have been a part of a season finale, again, for Milwaukee, something that should have been done a couple of years ago, had to get cut by the pandemic. So to have that as your season finale after all we've dealt with, we will rise again, and it will be even better.
Oh, that is just, it gives you just shivers. It really does. Lori Skelton, host of Afternoon Classics each weekday, our guide to spring classical concerts. Here is more of Trois Pièces by Nadia Boulanger. Still time to call in with your question or about a Wisconsin group performing classical music, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. That is Black Panther, performed by the ORF Vienna Radio Symphony Orchestra. Call in with questions, your thoughts about classical, 800-642-1234. Lori Skelton is here, host of Afternoon Classics each weekday on WPR's News and Music Network. Okay, Black Panther, Lori, next month, Milwaukee Symphony performing the score of the 2018 superhero movie. What can we expect?
You can expect the movie, nice big screen, and then underneath it, the full orchestra playing the soundtrack live.
Wow.
Now, the first time the Milwaukee Symphony did this was in November of 2015, and they got the chorus in because they were doing Home Alone. And I remember at the time saying, well, this will be nice for the family. This will be a way to get people out. And it's not quite a Christmas Pops concert, but it's fun. We were unprepared for how many people told us, I never realized what a big part the soundtrack plays until I actually saw the orchestra do it live. This has become incredibly popular all over the country, the opportunity to watch a movie with a live orchestra giving you the music. And I know Milwaukee Symphony has got a number of movies coming up. I don't know if I want to see Jaws with a live orchestra, but they're going to give it a shot the week after Black Panther.
Well, let's hear more from the Black Panther score performed by the ORF Vienna Radio Symphony Orchestra here. So, Lori, tell us about some of the instruments that we're hearing in this.
African instruments, different flutes, different harps, certainly different percussion than you're going to find in your typical Western orchestra. And, again, a different way to use voices. I mean, that sounds incredibly stirring, but that wasn't the Mahler Resurrection Symphony. And it's a challenge when you're putting a film score live. Obviously, the film has been done, and when the film was scored, you matched in the studio your instruments to what was on screen. As a symphony conductor, you're standing in front of your orchestra with headphones on because somebody is cueing you with a click track.
Oh.
So that you are perfectly in time with the film. You might think it's just a matter of, oh, you know, set a tempo and go. No, you have to pay minute attention to what's going on screen, because even if you're a beat off, you're going to throw off the entire emotional content, because that's what the film score is there to do, heighten the emotions of the movie. And so you have it. It's fun for the audience, and we're thrilled you're coming, but it ain't easy to do this.
I would imagine that takes a whole lot of practice and,
yes,
and just like a whole nother level of skill that you have to introduce in conducting, for sure.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of the interpretive end of a conductor's job out of the equation, because obviously things have been decided for you. The strings have to be this loud at this passage, and they have to get softer immediately. So once you have gotten your interpretive brain sort of set aside and really focus on, I have to recreate somebody else's moment, you do have to sort of override your gut instincts.
Talking about upcoming classical music performances, WPR's Lori Skelton getting us ready for them. She hosts Afternoon Classics and Wisconsin Classical. Been at WPR for 30 years. Call in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Lori, are you ready to move to A Force Awakens?
Who isn't?
Scheduled to perform Milwaukee Symphony to perform music from the famous movie franchise. How are you feeling? What's going through the Lori Skelton brain?
What's going through my brain is the Thursday night when the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra and Chorus got to perform the halftime show on Lambeau Field, and we did the Duel of the Fates. And this was the night the Packers were playing Chicago, and the Packers won. I think we had something to do with it. It's a great film score. There's no question about it. And John Williams himself admits, you know, he was paying attention to the great composers of the golden era of Hollywood, and those composers were paying attention to the likes of Wagner. So there is always an evolution in classical music when you're bringing it to a film soundstage. You never are working in a vacuum. You're always trying to bring as many different elements as you can.
I wish I could say May the 4th be with you, but I can't. I'm a little late on that. But, you know, what movie scores would you love to see performed in Wisconsin as we close out here?
The most beautiful film score for me is Gabriel Yared's The English Patient.
Oh.
I'm not sure that that's a film that is family friendly, but Anthony Minghella told Gabriel Yared, I'm giving you four hints, Puccini, Bach, Middle Eastern instruments, and one particular Hungarian folk song. It's still, the score brings me to tears, let alone seeing the movie. And if there were some way to bring that onto the concert stage, I would be thrilled.
Oh, that is so wonderful. Well, Lori, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us again.
My
so
pleasure
fun.
Indeed. Everybody, do whatever you can. Get out and support every local musician possible.
Lori Skelton hosts Afternoon Classics each weekday from 1 to 3, produces and hosts Wisconsin Classical Sundays at 1 on WPR's News and Music Network. For a calendar of upcoming events and concerts in Wisconsin, go to WPR.org/events. Here once again is, you know what, Star Wars, main theme. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.